This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And what a day. What an exciting moment it is. This is a day for thoughtful reflection on leadership, I think. We've got a leader of more than a billion people who prefers to travel in a tiny little Fiat sedan who will be addressing the government of the most powerful and prosperous nation on earth, a government which often wants to stay stuck in its own gridlock. The world will see if together they can rally their collective forces and tackle problems that so often frustrate and confound governments and social activists around the world. And we have with us someone who has rolled up his very secular sleeves with the Pope to talk about poverty and other problems facing the world, Dr. Jim Yong Kim, the former Dartmouth president who was called on by President Obama in 2012 to head the World Bank. With me now, Jim Yong Kim, president of the World Bank. Welcome.
Thanks very much, John.
So what is it like to be in the same room with Pope Francis, really rolling up your sleeves to talk concretely about dealing with the world's problems like poverty?
Well, it was a great experience, John. And as we were walking in, his fellow priests were telling us about all the changes. Gold crosses had been replaced with metal crosses. Everyone was living more humbly. And then walking into the room, it was a thrill. I've been working in Latin America for years, so we spoke in Spanish. And I told him directly about our goal at the World Bank of ending extreme poverty and boosting shared prosperity. And we talked about the foundations for that kind of conviction. And it's really embedded in ideas that he helped to create in Latin America decades ago, this notion of a preferential option for the poor. I asked him directly to help us with this movement to end extreme poverty in the world, and he simply answered, "Cuenta conmigo, count on me." And so we have been working closely with not only the Catholic Church but many others to try to end extreme poverty. You know, his great message is you got to focus on the poor, you got to focus on climate, because at the end of the day, the impact of climate change is the worst on the poor. I can tell you of many different countries where they're already beginning to feel the boot of the changes that are brought by more carbon in the air. And he said, you bring those two together because it's our responsibility to our children and to future generations.
You spoke with the Pope in 2013. It's 2015. What progress have you seen? What initiatives have actually taken root? It's fine to talk about the symbolism of taking down gold crosses and the kinds of symbolic gestures that even the World Bank can offer. But what can you do?
Well, you know, I think he's changed the conversation. So now he's such an iconic and beloved figure that talking about the extreme poor, you know, making it cool to think about and really engage the problem of poverty, I think is a change. I mean, on Saturday, we have the Global Citizen Festival where we have young people and Beyonce and all these great artists talking about a movement to end extreme poverty in the world. That's a difference from a few years ago.
And the cool to solve poverty idea, you know, could be a photo op unless what happens?
Well, so, you know, we've looked back, and if you think about what's happened in the world, you know, just 25 years ago, almost half the people living in developing countries lived in extreme poverty. That's less than $1.25 a day based on $2,005 dollars. And in the last 25 years, more than a billion people have been lifted out of extreme poverty. This is one of the great success stories of all time. Our goal is to get it down to less than 3%, which is about as low as we could probably get it. And it's going to be a big struggle over the next 15 years, but we can do it. So the three things that we found as we look back on our 70 years of history in fighting poverty, economies have to grow, but not in just any way. They have to grow in a way that lifts the poor out of poverty and that benefits the bottom 40% more than the rest of the population. We know now more than ever before that investing in people, health, education, these are not just good things to do, nice things to do. If people are healthier and if people are better educated in the medium and long term, your economy grows more. More jobs are created. And finally, a new thing for the bank, really, one of the things we've discovered is giving cash directly to poor people and then telling them that they should keep their kids in school and keep them healthy. That actually doesn't take away the desire to work. It actually boosts the economy and brings them into the labor market. So economies have to grow. You have to invest in people and you have to ensure that they don't fall back in poverty. If we do those three things, we can end extreme poverty in the world. And John, we're the first generation in human history that can actually say that we can see the end of extreme poverty.
What are the opportunities for coalition building that didn't exist before? The UN seems to be having some success on some problems, not so much success on conflict resolution. Are there new places to build coalitions, new kinds of partnerships?
You know, one of the things that I've done in my 3 years, the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, you know, we both were born in Korea. He's a little bit older than I am, but we've become very close, and we speak to each other in Korean, and we've been traveling together, and we've been trying to do just that. So we went to the Great Lakes region in Africa. We went to the Sahel region in Africa. We went to Somalia and the Horn of Africa, three different trips together. And what we tried to do was link his efforts at peace building with our efforts at development. And going together, we think, had a much bigger impact. Usually what it was is we'd step back, wait until all the peace agreements had been settled, and then go in. But we've come to the conclusion that that's too late. So a coalition, even within this multilateral system between the World Bank Group and the UN, has been very powerful. The other thing we've done, though, is that along with the Catholic Church, we've reached out to faith-based groups, because we really do believe that this is something we share deeply with the faith-based groups. Every single faith that we know of says that extreme poverty is bad, and it's the responsibility of people of faith to address this problem. So the faith-based groups, and these were Muslims and Hindus and Christians and Jews, many different faiths got together and made a declaration that they were committing themselves to ending extreme poverty. These are all new in the last 3 years.
Has microfinancing and the Muhammad Yunus model for small-scale financing and lending really been a critique of the World Bank's approach, top-down approach to investment and development?
Well, you know, we actually now fund a lot of microenterprise lending. And the key is that everyone in society should have access to capital. Now, you know, one of the things that's changed in 20 years, 20 years ago, John, I was part of a movement called 50 Years is Enough. And we tried to close the World Bank and IMF on their 50th anniversary. And at their 70th anniversary, you know, crazy coincidence, I happened to be president of the mm-hmm. World Bank. And part of it's because the World Bank's changed a lot. You know, what Professor Yunus has done is extremely important. His work has been repeated in many other places. And we came to understand from his work that it's that every single person in the world, if they want to start a business, should have access to capital. And John, 95% of all the jobs in the developing world are created in the private sector. So you can't solve the problem of poverty by just creating more government jobs. And in order for those jobs to be created in the private sector, entrepreneurs at every level, whether it's a mother who sells things at the bazaar, and or a small or even a large enterprise, they have such difficulty getting just the initial capital that we've now funded a lot of different efforts to help them get access to capital.
All right, let me see how that works. I mean, I happen to know that two blocks up the street here, there's a Citibank, which is my bank. I know where they are. I have their phone number. If I'm living in extreme poverty in Bangladesh, do I know how to get in touch with the World Bank?
Well, so you may not know how to get in touch with the World Bank, but you've probably benefited from some
of the
projects.
Well, I live in the world. It's the World Bank, right? So, I should be able to call them.
So it's not just a bank where we have tellers and people come and take cash out.
Right? Understood.
We're an investment bank. So let me just tell you exactly how an extremely poor person in Bangladesh. We did a study, and we thought, well, what's the impact of building roads in Bangladesh? So we actually looked at this and said, knowing that for poor people in Africa especially, but in other parts of the world, poor farmers lose about 50% of their produce because they don't have access to markets. So we asked a question, what if we build roads in Bangladesh that directly connect poor people to markets? Is that going to help? What happened was that we did a study of the groups that did have access to the roads and the groups that did not. And the groups that did have access to the roads, their income went up 75%. And the groups that did not have access to the roads, their incomes went down 25%. So even though that person can't come to a bank teller at the World Bank, that's not how we work, the person in Bangladesh has benefited, especially in those areas where we've built those roads, 20,000 kilometers of the roads, by having access to markets.
But you're still more involved in infrastructure development than you are in direct lending to individual entrepreneurs.
Yeah, the direct lending to individual entrepreneurs happens through intermediaries. So we actually have a private sector group called the International Finance Corporation, and they lend to banks that then can lend to those groups. It would be impossible for us at our scale to be able to handle individual accounts at the, you know, few hundred dollar
level.
No,
I understand. But
we do try to reach them through the intermediaries. Yeah.
What do you make of the internal difficulties that the World Bank seems to be having right now in terms of political disagreements over the direction that you've decided to take the bank?
Well, you know, when I came into the bank, there had been no real change in the structure for about 20 years. And so every organization needs to rethink its structure. And we had become a little bit too siloed. So I took the bank through a major change that I was convinced that we needed. And most people, before we started the change, were convinced we needed it. But change is really, really hard. The good news is that the change is over. Not only did we change our structure, but we took about $400 million out of the budget, which is always difficult. And no group of employees ever likes that kind of activity. But the good news is we know what we're spending. We know how we're spending. We're much more efficient. And during that time, John, our business went up. So in middle-income countries, 25% increase in business. In our lending to the poorest countries, we had the biggest first year we've ever had. So the demand is there. I think the demand's going to get even greater. We've been through the change. Things are settling down. And now we've really got to look at how are we going to now tackle this problem of ending extreme poverty in just 15 years.
How interconnected are all of these problems, climate change, poverty? You alluded to it before, but in a sense, you have to deal with everything at once. You can't simply saw off Syria and, you know, take a look at a disease over here in Bangladesh. Yeah. You've got to look at everything together.
Yeah. So the way we do it is country by country and then region by region. And what we've now done, and this is part of the change process, is we have our best thinkers in every country say, so what is the task for your particular country in helping to grow your economy, invest in your people, ensuring that they don't fall into poverty? And different countries have different kinds of issues. There are countries in Africa, for example, John, who have huge mineral resources, but their mineral resources have been exploited by a very small group of people, and it hasn't benefited the whole population. It's called the natural resource curse. You know, other countries need to go from mostly focusing on commodity exports to going up the value chain and doing more value-added kinds of activities. Others need to really focus on their educational system. The key is that it's not the same in any given country, and we now are very intently negotiating with the countries so that we can set priorities.
Jim Yong Kim is president of the World Bank, and if I'm not mistaken, you will be on stage with Beyonce and Big Bird
Big
on Saturday.
Bird. Absolutely.
On Saturday. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.